This meeting is now being recorded.
Welcome, everybody, to the CCDRT plenary meeting number 18. We are in the thick of it. Again, and please accept my apologies for the change of date. I had to testify before Senator Cruz while the call would otherwise be going on, and I'm sure he would have given me a hard time trying to multitask, so I appreciate your flexibility in rescheduling. So let's go ahead through the agenda. The first topic, if I recall correctly, is the finalization of data requests. So maybe I will let Aliza take the microphone to give her understanding of what requests we have on the table, which are easy in process and which we need to fight for.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks. This is Aliza. So I didn't really prepare anything to share with you on the screen here, but I just wanted to talk through what I've received and give a quick update, I guess. I'd like to leave more time for you guys to talk through your papers today. So we received a number of requests for data from compliance from Fabro, Calvin, and from David on the URS results. So those have all been compiled and put together and are now with Maggie Sirod's team. We're hoping to hear more probably within the week. Brian and I have been discussing those with her, so we will follow up with you on those as they're available. I don't really have much more than that on those. With regard to the data requests that were made in Vienna, we've been working on some of them. Some of them I've reached out to, for example, the competition team on an updated chart that they had requested for registrations that are and are not e-com. There's also some changes that were asked of the metrics that we have on our CCT page. Those are in progress and nearly done. And as we update those and publish those, I'll be sending you all reminders. So I think of everything we've received so far, it's doable. It'll take a little bit of time, but it's certainly doable. And I'm trying to respond as quickly as we can to what we have received. The last point I wanted to note, excuse me, in Vienna we had talked about the team wanting to get a little bit more data from Nielsen on perhaps particular cross tabs for certain regions or on certain questions, comparing certain questions against each other. The Nielsen team has a list. Dave compiled a list when he was talking with you that he's putting together answers to and will be sending to you. But I also sent out a note last week, I think it was to the team, if there are any more additional requests you'd like to send me those by this week. I haven't received anything else, so I'll ask for a last call on that topic today if possible so I can get those to Nielsen. And we can go from there. I think that's it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
So in addition to that, there is the DNS abuse study, and Alice is working on scheduling a call for us to discuss that with Teresa. So that's in process. David, I don't know if you have any kind of an update on the INTA study going into the field. And whether we're still on schedule there. Is there anything you can speak to? Oh, he's on. So is there anything you can type to, David? All right, no update. And Megan, you've got your hand up. You might be on mute, Megan. Megan, we can't hear you. All right. Megan's typing your question.
Hello?
Thank you for the reminder, Megan. Yes, that's on my list, and I'm also working on an answer for you on that as well.
Excellent. Anybody else have any questions or data requests that Lisa did not bring up or I did not bring up that you want to make sure remain in the radar? Because this is really it. I got a brief update from Andrew Mack yesterday that they're proceeding apace with their interviews and should have north of 30 of them done by the end of the month and be able to present us with some kind of report and recommendations based on those interviews. Okay. I'm sorry, I guess I skipped roll call and statements of interest. Is there anybody on the phone who isn't in the Adobe Connect? And are there any changes to anyone's statement of interest? Okay. David is typing. But we will soldier on here while we wait for David to type his message. Alice, I think I'm turning the microphone over to you on the Vienna action items.
Yes, sure. One moment. I will pull up the Vienna action items document. So this was just remind everyone that we've compiled all the action items from Vienna on the wiki, on the archives for the Vienna meeting. And you will, as you will see, they're categorized and classified per topic. And we wanted to get an update from some of you, at least, on how you're doing on your action items and if you need any specific help to address them. Jota, do you want me to run through the action items?
You know what I do, but just in a maybe I guess some of them, but just in a the David's note refers back to our last topic, and so I don't know if I know that there was some traffic on the listserv about this, but the final resolution of it was. My understanding is that WIPO was the only organization that had produced a report, and the others did not have data they could share with us. Is that right, Aliza?
Hi, yes, that's right. David, I thought my recollection was that you or my suggestion was that the review team reach out to the dispute resolution providers to see if they have anything further. They've provided everything they were obligated to provide to ICANN. In fact, the WIPO report was something additional that they produced. So I think it would just be more appropriate for the request to come from the review team.
So maybe that should be from me, I guess. So, or else, David, we can reach out together, or you can coach me, and I'll reach out. Do we have the contact information that we need, or can we get that from you, Aliza?
Maybe
David has.
Okay, sounds like David.
All right, he has all the contact information. So, David and I will get in touch after the call and make sure that request goes out then. But I guess I would go ahead and add it to your list, Aliza, so that your list of data requests is comprehensive, even if it's not in your basket.
Sure.
Megan, go ahead.
Yes, and I think, is the microphone working now?
Yes.
It is.
Can you hear me? Wonderful. I forgot to push one of the many buttons that has to be pushed before you turn on my phone. So just a minor thing on Vienna update. I see that under application and evaluation, there's an action item. It's good that we have this, actually. It says, Megan, to identify students which withdrew applications that received GAC early warning. I have that, and it's in my little paper. But so I just wanted to clarify exactly what I'm supposed to do there. But we don't have to do it right now. That can be done offline. And if someone just wants to clarify exactly what else has to be done? Thanks.
Uh, Sorry, Carlos. All Megan said about her action item, we're back on item number 3 on the agenda. And the last action item under application and evaluation is that Megan was to identify strings with redue applications, the received GAC early warning, and so that information is in the paper that she already delivered in Vienna, which I recall as well. So maybe, Alice, if you have a recollection about the clarity, to clarify what that action item intends, because I don't remember it either.
I don't remember either. Elisa, do you recall by any chance?
This is Elisa. The only thing I can think of is it might be related to what you were asking earlier in the chat, Megan, which is the data on the advice, on the refunds that were issued to those withdrew. Is that not it?
Right. That would be useful, yes. That depends on the data that you're going to provide, on the numbers and the amount that came back for people who actually withdrew their application.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I have the number that withdrew, but we don't know how many withdrew early enough to get their money back, and that's what you were doing. Okay, so that's clear. Anyway, that's what paper has to be updated and clarified. Okay, understood. Thanks.
Great.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
And Megan. Does anybody have any questions? Alice asked whether she should go through this point by point, and I'm not sure that's necessary. Has everybody had a chance to scan this document for their own items, and do they make sense, and are there any questions? I guess that's the way to proceed. I think everybody has independent scrolling of the document, so it's important to realize that it scrolls onto a second page. So I guess, Jordan, make sure and look at all of the items that were on your list and make sure that you agree with them or if you have questions about them being on this list. Does anybody else have any other questions about this action item out of Vienna?
Jonathan, it's Jordan. It looks like
a
bunch seem to be done already. Or is this just a list that was taken in Vienna, not with, regardless of whether they've been completed or not? Regardless of whether they've been completed.
I think that's correct. So, I mean, I think if they've been completed, it just means that Alice is not yet aware that they've been completed. So, if there's things on here that are still that aren't still in process, then I guess just let Alice know.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thanks, everyone. Let's move on. We're going to get a couple. Part of what we discussed prior to the Vienna meeting is that we were going to focus on the sub-team work and not focus on reporting back to the plenary. And so we devoted most of our time to being divided up into sub-teams, with the understanding that we would then devote the majority of our plenary calls to these reports back of findings so that the entire group has a chance to hear a presentation on those findings and provide feedback. And so this is the first call in which we're attempting to do that. So this is the guinea pig items, but this is how we're trying to proceed after all of the sub-team work that took place in Vienna. So I'm hoping I can hand the mic to Jordan to lead the first portion of this report section of the agenda.
Sure. So we're going to limit the discussion on the plenary calls to topics that have already been discussed within the sub-teams, in which I think we're relatively in agreement on how to interpret the data that we've seen so far. So today...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, today we'll be discussing three elements from the competition and consumer choice side that fall into that category. I've done a write-up using your template, Jonathan. This was done some time ago, and this is sort of one of the guinea pig exercises on the template on sort of market share or concentration, it's actually concentration calculations that analysis group did relating to the new GTLD program. And then Stan has done two write-ups on some market share and market structure findings that he has written up in prose, actually. Both of these have been circulated around to the broader team, so hopefully folks have seen the documents in question. I recirculated the concentration write-up this morning. So as opposed to having either me or Stan just talk for a super long time, I think maybe we'll alternate between the two of us. So if Stan's in a position to do so and wants to talk about one of his two papers, maybe we'll start off with him, then jump back to me to talk about the concentration, and then we'll jump back to Stan to talk about the last of his papers. So Stan, do you want to choose one of your papers and talk through the findings?
Actually, just one small correction. There are actually three papers. There's also one on trademarks.
Yeah, that's right, but we haven't yet discussed the findings from the trademark paper within the sub-team.
I would rather hear people's responses to what I've circulated. I mean, I've sent it out about 10 days ago, and I sent it out again the other day. I'm really waiting for people to respond. If I can either sort of proceed without responses, or I can wait until I get them. I don't think it's really worthwhile for me to sort of repeat what I've already written up. I'm more interested in using this call to get feedback from people about what I've written, and even more, I would appreciate people sending me written comments rather than just simply comments on this call.
Megan, you have your hand up.
Yes, thanks a lot. So I am rather sympathetic with Stan regarding written comments. I think it's very useful to have feedback. And, of course, probably all of us have many other things going on. So sometimes, unless we've taken an exact note of what's been said in the press, we might not have noticed. So on the written documents, and I'm not suggesting we not discuss them, don't get me wrong, but I think it's always useful to follow it up with something in writing. And one thing that I would appreciate very much, at least, I don't know, it doesn't have a title on it, but it's the paper that starts with an issue that has arisen in the past. Oh, that's the trademark one. I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to talk about it. Sorry. That's
we'll be talking about that on our sub-team call next week, Megan.
But then I will make a general comment, and I will make my specific ones in writing to Stan. But I think they're very useful, these papers. One thing that I think would be useful for all of us, Sam, is if you gave us a kind of overall, what does this mean, what do we do about it, what's the next step, what are the implications, something like that, if you see what I'm saying. So I understand the analysis. I think it's good, although I have one question about the difference between back-end providers and registrars. I didn't quite understand. We talked about it briefly the other day in Washington, but I must say I'm not entirely clear what that distinction is. So that would be useful to clarify. But then also the next step, which is what do we do about this? What are the implications for the future? Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. This is Jonathan again for the record. I guess the issue is that we had set an expectation of people sort of presenting their findings on the call. I think just an even outline form, giving people something to react to that we then follow up with written remarks is probably worthwhile. I don't know that people came on the call for better or for worse, prepared to with their questions on these papers. So I'm hoping that we can proceed with just brief presentations about the findings and the interpretation. I don't know that there are recommendations that have yet been discussed inside of these subteams. Just sort of what kind of agreement was reached about the findings inside the subteams, I think, would be worthy of some presentation. Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, Jonathan, in that vein, I was just going to add, I think, and to build on what Megan was saying, I think an overlay of interpretation. I mean, ultimately, what we're going to want to get to in the report, I think, is not just the presentation of the data, but some subjective interpretation of it as well. So I guess I would be curious, like, you know, looking at the Tern document that's being presented, for example, which is the structure of the TLD industry, like, I would look at that and say, oh, look, most of the TLDs are quite small. So Stan alludes to a comment, which is that raises the question of whether gTLDs are viable. So we may want to, you know, there's been some discussion in the past about looking at what sort of minimum scale looks like, and it looks like it actually may be quite important to answer that follow-up question, given how skewed the distribution is to the small end of the scale. But at the same time, I'm not really sure what to make of the fact that there's, I don't know, order 40, 50 TLDs with at least 50,000 registrations, and so some amount of, I don't know how Stan looks at that, I don't, you know, maybe just helpful to think about, do we think that looks like success? Is that surprisingly good? Is that surprisingly bad? How does that compare to other TLDs? I think that's what's missing for me is some overlay of interpretation of okay, here's the data, and what do we think it means? And I guess I'll add that by contrast, I tried to put in the market concentration data, you know, I basically tried to write up that I conclude from looking at this that the new gTLDs themselves represent a much less sort of concentrated quote-unquote market, for one definition of market. But when you look at their effect on the overall gTLD marketplace, they're just not big enough, and not enough time has passed for them to have a substantial effect on the concentration of the gTLD market as a whole. And therefore, the gTLD market as a whole remains quite concentrated, particularly because Com and to a lesser extent Net and Org are much larger than the other gTLDs. Similarly, the registrar marketplace looks relatively not concentrated, and that seems not to have been affected by the introduction of new gTLDs. So I think those are sort of like more interpretive statements than just presenting the data that I think ultimately we're going to need to get to.
Stan, I see you have your hand up. Megan, I think that's an old hand, but leave it up if it's not. Stan, do you want to address Jordan's question?
Yeah, I apologize for hiding my interpretation in the first sentence of this, because I think that's the lesson I draw from this, and I have indicated in the past that I'd like to get to have people who have more experience in the industry respond to this. But the first sentence of this piece says that the entry of new gTLDs has been facilitated by the availability of inputs, especially back-end service and registrar services. So, and I think that's an interpretation of the data. I would be interested in whether people agree with that.
Hey, Stan, it's Jordan. I actually don't know what you mean by that sentence. So maybe that's why it's not really hidden
okay.
so much.
All right, yeah. Fine. You can enter an industry by producing all the stuff. You could mine bauxite. You could have run smelters, and you can produce aluminum wrap. Or you can do one of those and engage in other activities by contract. What the data here say to me is that if you're a new gTLD, you needn't be in the registrar business. You can acquire registrar services from lots of entities. In fact, there are literally hundreds of them. And it appears, although the back end side is more concentrated, it appears that there are a reasonable number of back end providers for, so that a new GTLD can employ them. So you needn't enter at all three stages of the process to be an entrant. And my interpretation of this is that is facilitated entry. And the rest of the paper talks about essentially about the structure of the registrar and the back end market. That's data that we have. And so I think that the first sentence, I hope it's clear now, the first sentence is talking about factors that facilitate the entry of new GTLDs and my interpretation based on the data.
Great, thanks. That was helpful, Stan.
By the way, Megan has talked to me about this, and she suggested that we shouldn't say, and I agree with her, that we shouldn't say that if somebody wants to enter at all three stages, they shouldn't be allowed to. That's not what I intend here. I'm only talking about the facilitation of entry by new GTLDs. And by the way, of course, more work is needed here because a number of the tables aren't completely filled in.
Thanks, Stan. And I guess, who's this?
It's Megan again. I had my hand, thought it was an old one. It was to come back.
No, I was about to call on you. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
So thanks. And thanks, Stan, for recalling that aspect about what we were calling vertical integration. But I still wondered if someone could clarify, maybe I missed it in the discussion, so I must admit I was trying to do something else too. How are we calling the registrars as opposed to the back-end providers, and how are we distinguishing the exact services that they provide? Could someone explain that to me in 2 minutes so I understand the distinction? And then I had another point, but I've forgotten it now.
Hey, Megan, it's Jordan. Maybe I'll try to answer that question just for industry context. So I think it's probably helpful to think about three parties in the sort of in the value chain here. And as Stan points out, in theory, these could all be the same parties, but there's a nice set of contractual frameworks which allows these to all be separate in the context of the GTLD registries. The first would be the entity that the end user, or the registrant, actually has a business relationship with, a direct business relationship with. That's the retailer, and that's the registrar, right? So we all know that probably, but the registrant is buying a domain from the registrar. They transact with the registrar, and then the registrar doesn't run the sort of canonical database for availability for that TLD. They connect back to a registry, and that registry is under contract with ICANN for a given TLD. So the registrar, once they get the order from the registrant, has a contract with the registry in order to be able to sell that domain name. And then in turn, the registry may decide that it wants to provide sort of like the business side of things, the front office functions. And, you know, maintain the relationships with registrars and do the marketing and so on, but maybe they don't have the technical expertise to actually run the database. And so they might go and outsource the operation of the database and all the technical bits to yet another company, and that company would be the back-end provider or the registry services provider. And that company is basically just providing purely technical operations for the GTLD itself. And so that company doesn't have any direct relationship with ICANN or with the registrar. It's just a service contracting on behalf of the registry operator in order to provide the technical services. So does that make sense?
That makes absolute sense. Now I understand exactly what you're saying. And now it makes me wonder, is it even relevant? Because if it's purely technical and it's between the registry and the back-end provider, then this has nothing to do with the registrant or the registrar. How the registry runs its business is almost irrelevant, isn't it? For our purposes. Because what I was confusing it was, I just finished my thought, and perhaps it's going off in the wrong direction. But the reason I'm raising it is because in the ICANN market, TLD marketplace survey, and I believe somewhere in the Marketplace Health Index, that's what it's called, there was a discussion about service providers and services that could be provided. So I was presuming that's what the back-end service providers were, but the way it's written there, and it links back to this paper that I've done, it's clear that the services that are provided, and these are to the registrant, not to the registry, are something that they want to look at. So that's where my confusion came from. In fact, for our purposes, isn't the back-end provider entirely irrelevant in this case to our assessment of consumer choice, consumer protection, and competition? That's my question.
So I'll just briefly answer Megan Jordan again. I think it's only relevant to the extent that Stan alluded to earlier, which is that it makes it possible to become a registry operator without a big investment in the technical platform. If you didn't have the registry service or the back-end provider entities in existence, then each registry operator would have to build its own technical infrastructure, which would be quite which would be quite expensive and significantly add to, I mean, it would change really the business for a lot of these companies.
This is Jonathan. There's also a significant discussion now about pre-approving back-end service providers that could even further reduce the cost for applicants so that they don't have to be evaluated through the prism of each applicant, but evaluated separately and just once, thereby decreasing the application costs for individual applicants as well.
Okay, very good. Thanks. Very useful.
Jamie, you have your hand up.
I am no longer muted.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks, and again, apologies to everyone that I was not able to join you in Vienna, but it sounds like it was somehow a productive meeting nonetheless. There are three things I wanted to mention. One on the registrar, on the paper we were just discussing about registrars. I mean, it seems to be one key fact that seems to be omitted is that except for a handful of TLDs, any accredited registrar can sell any new GTLD. So not only is the market facilitated by the number of registrars who are already there is virtually no barrier to entry for more registrars to come in. And that's just the continuation of the open policy for registrars, even with generic, the legacy generic TLDs that are not sponsored. So that's one. Two, I continue to be concerned about the focus on concentration as opposed to competition and potential barriers to competition. The other paper, Jordan, that you cited, that you sent around or mentioned in a recent email, you know, talks about HHIs and focuses on those. Didn't see anything about actual price competition. Obviously, I'm not an economist, but my understanding is that HHIs are increasingly unimportant. Based on other data and analyses that economists do to find that, for example, in even a market with only three or four players, there can be robust price competition. And so it would seem to me that, you know, certainly HHIs might be relevant, but they're not a proxy for competition, and in and of themselves, don't really say much, especially when you throw in the complicating factor of that the dominant player is subject to price caps. And so those are and then the last thing I wanted to mention was that just to Megan's point, yes, the market is facilitated by back-end providers and registrars, and then the applicant doesn't have to provide those, but the applicant is, or the operator is still very much in charge of, you know, it's like United Airlines, you know, contracting out the catering for their flights. They still, you know, they're still in control of the bad food that we get.
Having just taken a United Airlines flight, two of them, I can understand that.
Yeah, thanks.
I feel like you should hand the microphone back to Stan after that, and I'll come back to Carlos.
Two things. I would just add to what Jordan said before. Not only I believe that these factors facilitate entry, they also may. When I first saw the data on the number of registrants for the new GTLDs and saw that many of them were very small, I began to wonder whether, in fact, those entities could survive. The point I would make here is that it is possible that you may be able to survive at a very small scale, precisely because you can purchase inputs, again, registrar and back-end services in the marketplace. So it's possible that the, if you like, the minimum viable scale of a registry is lower than I would have thought, given the availability of these inputs available from third parties. To Jamie's point, of course we would like price data, but of course we don't have price data. I'm talking about price data for the legacy GTLDs, and that is a significant handicap in our ability to analyze the effect of entry on prices. I mean, no, I proposed two projects that would involve the use of prices from legacy GTLDs, and we do not have them, and apparently we will not get them. So we can make the point that it would be nice to have price data. David has suggested that in the future it might be appropriate for ICANN's contracts with the particularly the price cap GTLDs to provide their wholesale price data so that we could do this analysis. But at present, we are significantly handicapped by the inavailability of the data.
True that.
So this is Jamie. On the last point, a number of the legacy GTLDs are switching to the new registry agreement, which would require them to submit price data. But in my point,
we won't have it in time for this project.
Oh, understood. And you know, it's been said a million times. You know, we are very early in this market, and so there's a lot of data related to the performance of this new market and legacy market that we don't have. My point was not to say that we haven't asked for the right data, and Stan, I totally understand your frustrations. Simply that substituting HHI doesn't help make the analysis better.
No. I think you're overstating the case. There is a significant literature. I've actually circulated a paper that I wrote on this subject to everybody some time ago, in which there are a great many studies that link concentration to prices. And so the idea that these are completely unrelated concepts is not consistent with the economic learning. It is correct that you are correct that it would be better had we had those data for this project. I am prepared to write something up for us that said, gee, we could have done more if we had better data. We recommend that ICANN collect the data in the future, but this is the best we can do in the circumstances.
Understood. I don't disagree with any of that. My understanding, again, I'm not an economist, but my understanding is that there's also literature, and we should get it, that shows that even in markets with very high concentration, there can be, and there is, robust price competition.
Jamie, I will recirculate my review of the literature, and I mean, it's true that you probably don't have to have atomistic competition to get price competition, if that's the point you're making. But you cannot say that there is no relationship between concentration and prices, because there's a whole literature that says there is.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it would be a mistake to overstate that HHIs alone mean that there is and that high concentration means that there's no price competition.
Well, just
especially
to make
with
the
especially
point,
with new entry.
Just to make the point specifically here in this context that we started with, the back end market is relatively concentrated. Okay, if you look at the data, it's fairly high HHI. What I wrote here, I said, well, there seem to be a half a dozen fair-sized back-end providers, and my interpretation is, notwithstanding the high level of concentration, those inputs seem readily available to new GTLDs. But I am an economist. I will draft some language, and we'll see if the committee is comfortable with it.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Stan, and thanks, Jamie. I guess, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie, part of what you may have been trying to say, I apologize for putting words in your mouth if that's what I'm doing, was that in the absence of, if we had the price data, the sort of effect data, if you will, we might still be looking at causes, barriers to entry, unfair competition, et cetera, leverage, that were the causes of those effects. And in the absence of the effects data, which i.e. the prices,
right,
are we doing enough to evaluate the causes instead to be able to suggest that there either appear to be or don't appear to be barriers to entry and things of that sort? I think that's part of what you were saying, and I think that's also part of what Stan is saying here in this document, is that, you know, that absent effects data, there is at least a decreased barrier to entry associated with third-party service providers, and so that it at least goes down the road of what you're asking, Jamie, and maybe you're just asking for more things like that that are analysis of causes in the absence of data about effects. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense, and you know, once again, you articulate things better than I do. I saw Jordan's paper and was puzzled by the sort of exclusive emphasis, what seemed to be anyway, exclusive emphasis on HHI, and you know, yes, HHI is important, but looking at these other factors, barriers to entry, price, you know, the fact that the largest operators price capped, those seem to, you know, a fuller context, as much of the full context should be described as possible. That's all for me. Hello?
Hello?
I think we're still here.
Maybe. Thanks, Jamie. Carlos, you've got your hands up.
Yes, thank you very much. I really like Jordan's suggestion that we get into more subjective discussions. It's difficult to do on a phone call, though, to have wide participation, not only because of the language. But I want to make some positive comments as well. I think it's very useful to have a very clear picture of the value chain, as discussed earlier in the call. I think it's very relevant, the issue of concentration of the back-end providers. We have people yelling in the underserved areas that the big back-end providers don't want to push their new GPLDs forward. And I think it's a serious issue we have to follow. Regarding the size of the very small TLDs, I want to remind Jordan and Stan that we have a lot of very, very, very small CCTLDs that live with less than 20,000, less than 10,000 registered strings. And we should not forget that those are small monopolies, of course. They didn't pay $185,000 for that, but there is a survival rate of very small and very low cost of keeping the minimum support for these small places. So I like very much to focus on the middleman issue there of the back end provider, and I hope we can continue the discussion of the HIAEs in back end providers, particularly from the point of view of underserved areas. Thank you very much. I'm in the traffic. I cannot see your paper, Stan, but I will go back to that when I'm sitting in front of a computer. Thank you.
Jonathan, you may be on mute.
Yeah, David, are you on now? Do you need to still type? You've got your hand up. Well, it looks like he wrote.
Hey, Jonathan, it's Jordan. So David's question basically seems to be, if we're going to assume that the back-end providers are, factor into sort of the minimum viable scale equation, it would be good to understand what they charge, which I agree with. But then his follow-up question is, like, do we have a way to get that information? I think the answer is no.
Can anyone from staff speak to that point about how we have a creative way to get at that data?
This is Aliza. I mean, short of actually going to each of the back-end providers and asking what they're charging their clients, I'm afraid I don't have a good answer.
And Ms. Jordan, they won't tell you if you ask.
Thanks, Jordan.
I mean, I think part of the problem is they negotiate individual deals with each of the registry operators, and they probably perceive that there's some value in information asymmetry, and they probably also negotiated some deals really in their favor and some deals much more favorable to the registry operators, and they probably don't want the people that have bad deals to know about the good deals.
Makes sense. Is it possible to make this a part of the deep dive discussions that we're planning to have with a few of the applicants that agree to it?
That makes sense.
They may
I guess that they probably have a confidentiality clause in there. I will say, so there is some discussion right now. The PIR, which runs .org, has recently did an RFP for there to sort of get a new backend. They're currently using Afilias. I guess Afilias could also bid, but to bid out the services. And there's been some speculative press, I guess. Some of the press around that includes speculation about what they're paying now and what the expectation would be, what they would pay at the end of the RFP process. So we might look to those public published accounts and use that to educate ourselves somewhat. And I believe, don't hold me to this, but I believe the articles that I read said that they think that Afilias is probably paying, I mean, sorry, PIR is probably paying Afilias about $3 per second level domain today, and the expectation is that that price might drop to more like $1 per SLD at the end of the RFP process. So maybe that would give us a range that we could use. $1 to $3 per SLD might be a reasonable range to assume.
That's great. Let's try to dig some of that press up. And then, I mean, again, with the applicants, they presumably had conversations with more than one back-end provider, so they might be able to talk about ranges as well without getting into the specifics of their contract, I guess. Jordan, are you able to see if you can find the press about what you're speaking?
Yeah, sure thing.
All right, thanks, Jordan. Carlton.
Yes, this is Carlton. I hope you're hearing me.
Not super loudly, so speak up if you can.
Okay, I'm coming in through Skype, so it's kind of a bit of a Rube Goldberg sheet here. A couple of things I want to make, and I want to say this clearly so that people understand where I'm coming from. Louder, please. Okay. While I don't take instructions from the at-large, I will tell you what the issue is for the at-large with respect to what Stan is talking about. The contention in the at-large is that the issue of demand for new GPLDs was all made up. There was no demand, and so it was introduced for other operating purposes. They believe that there's going to be a consolidation and a concentration in the marketplace that is going to affect the competition issue. The issue of concentration in the marketplace and the numbers of small DTLDs with very small numbers of registration has seized their attention. And their interest is knowing when does a small DTLD becomes and remains viable. So they are very concerned that at the CCT we ask questions like, what is the threshold for viability of a new GTLD, and whether or not the other operating conditions, which is to say the back-end services and all the other cost inputs that would make them viable, we know about. Okay. So I believe, and I'm asking the question, but I also believe that in this market, concentration could actually impact price. We also want to anticipate what would happen if some GTLDs dropped out of the race, literally just fold and they're taken over by another more viable partner. If we don't believe that concentration impacts pricing, then we need to examine whether or not the price caps that are in the old GTLD space, which is the one price caps against COM, is also relevant. And that's why I am depending on the economists to at least get some data on this and answer those questions, give some guidance in answering those questions. Just like Jordan says, one of the pieces of data that I got sent by a couple of people in the at large is the fact that back-end services providers are providing services for between $2 and $4 per registration. Carlos already told you that in the LAC region, some folks believe that even that price is not viable for them. That is something that from this region we have heard time and time again. Hence, if you see my insistence that we find and make some informed position, take some informed position about market concentration is important. If you see us insisting that we have to have a ballpark at least of what those input costs are, that's the reason for us asking those questions, because our constituents is asking those questions. So I hope you understand why we're taking this position.
Carlton, have you shared the reports that you've seen that has those price estimates?
I've asked two persons to send me. I got excerpts, and I wanted the actual long reports. So I've asked them to send it. This was about a week ago. I've asked them to send it to me.
Okay. And do you have any way of documenting the feedback that those prices are represent a barrier to entry to people in the Caribbean?
I have heard it it comes up at DNS forum. It comes up at several DNS forum. I don't know if I have access to it, but I can ask the people who've asked the questions who have made the comments to give me more information. Here's the problem with that. A lot of them say, well, competitive business data that they don't want released. I've heard that too. But I continue to ask the question, tell me what is viability. Tell me what is viability in context. And that's what
Jonathan, I cannot raise my hand, but I want to say something.
Okay, I'll come to you then. Your hand's already up, it looks like. But the
I left it up when I left home. I cannot bring it down anymore.
Okay, all right. I'll come back to you, Carlos. So, Carlton, it's certainly not something we can assert. I guess that's the problem. We can anonymize conversations or data, but we can't assert that it represents a barrier to entry without data to support it. So that's the concern. We can't rely on
understand that, Jonathan.
Conversations we've had.
I actually understand that. I am with you on that. We hear the questions, but I think we should at least take a good faith effort to see if we can find answers for it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying we can assert anything. I'm saying
I'm asking you for your help in doing that, because others have reached the ends of their connections to get that type of information. So I'm agreeing with you, but it's not something that we can just ask for on a call. I need to turn that back to you and get your commitment to try and get at some of that data.
I am trying, and I will continue to try to get it, because this is what I call it's out there in the ether, people saying these things, and it is connected to some larger questions, and I just want to follow each line to see what we can tease out and what we can find out. So we can say, this is the situation. We cannot confirm this. At least be in a position to say, we have explored it. We cannot confirm it.
We can certainly do that. And as Aliza mentioned, some of this is getting sussed out by AM Global in their surveys. And I can tell you that price is not falling at the top of the list. It's actually a value proposition that people don't have a sense of a business, a profitable business model associated with this. So, I mean, I think that lack of funds doesn't seem to be the top of the list of why people didn't apply for new TTLDs, but let's wait for his report. Carlos, you said you had something to add.
Yes, thank you very much, Jonathan. Thank you, Carlton. There is also the regional market studies that I can paid for the Middle East and for Latin America, and just the draft Latin America one was presented 2 weeks ago, and a proxy to discuss this cost of entry is, of course, that some of these smaller CCTLDs charge between $10 and $150 for a domain name. And there you have the numbers for the break even point. But we should involve this data from the CCTLDs, both from the Middle East already published and Latin America about to be published for public comments in that segment of the discussion. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Yes, thanks, Carlos. Those are two papers that I've seen a draft of one for LAC. That you're absolutely right. That gives us a substrate.
All right, thanks, Carlos and Carlton. So, Carlos, your hand is going to be up indefinitely. Carlton, you put yours down. And Jordan, is that an old hand, or are you ready to comment?
Yeah, sorry, it's Jordan McKinnon. That's a new hand. Wow, I have a lot of things potentially to say, so where to start? So a few quick comments. First is, I think Carlos alluded to something that may make a lot of sense in order to get our heads wrapped around the minimum viable scale question, which is it may be worth talking to CCTLDs as well, just to understand. You know, they often have been around for much longer and potentially at a small scale, and get an understanding of sort of how they make that work. Because if we see a CCTLD operator, you know, running with, say, 1,000 names, and they're able to continue to do that year after year, that might give us a clue that GTLD operators could do the same. I did take a quick look. There, Carlton and I went back and forth a little bit on chat, and I think one of the questions I was sort of struck by as I was sitting here was, does it actually matter whether this large mass of GTLD providers that are quite small succeed or not? So I did a little bit of back of the envelope math. It looks there's almost 500, 477 out of what's the total? I can't lost my scroll powers. Out of 641.
600. Yeah.
Are in the less than 10,000 range. And so using really bad back of we have better data on this, I think, but using bad back of the envelope math and saying that the ones between 0 and 1,000 are 500 domains each, and the ones between 1,000 and 1 and 10,000 are 5,000 domains each, I sort of got to a total number of about 1.35 million, which would be smaller than the biggest, the single biggest of the GTLDs. That whole mass of names under management by the bottom 447 all together is probably about the same size as one of the biggest of the GTLDs. So individual failures at that level don't seem that relevant to the overall competitive marketplace. Now, it may have an issue in terms of consumer trust. It may have an issue in terms of the effects on those registrants, so I still think we want to be conscious of the chance of failure, but at least from the competition perspective, it doesn't seem like those very small operators are likely to be that material, looking individually or even in mass at whether they're successful or not. The last thing I wanted to add, and I think we resolved this on chat, but you know, Jamie raised the point that it doesn't really make sense to just hone in on any individual metric, and pointed out that the document I put together focused very much on market concentration, and that's correct. It does focus very much on the concentration statistics, but that's because that's what it's about. It's just trying to summarize the data that analysis group put together on concentration. It is not making a statement about, therefore, this is the only data that we should be using to understand competition. It's just a summary of those particular data points. So what we'll do as we get more and more of these data points and summaries put together is then we can start to draw inferences about the overall state of competition that will drive our ultimate findings. So, Jamie, I don't think it's intended that those numbers are saying any more than they are. They're just saying that the concentration numbers are quite high in the legacy marketplace, and that the new GTLD, so while they're less concentrated, looking at them as an individual mass, don't seem to have had an effect, largely just because, as we discussed in Vienna, the overall market's not, the overall number of domains isn't growing that quickly, and therefore it takes a long time for new entrants to have a very big effect on the market.
Got it, Jordan. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. Stan, you're up next.
I have a few things to say, but let me say, as a preface, when I get really discouraged, it's really reassuring to hear Jordan use HHIs and minimum viable scale. They come trippingly off his tongue now, so I think I'm making some progress. I got to say three things to say. One, a general point I think is responds a bit to what Carlton said before. At the beginning of the report, we have to say something like, these are early days. Not enough time has passed for us to determine what the long-run equilibrium in this industry is going to be. So we have everything that comes later has to be qualified by the fact that this is an early snapshot. And I hope that early in the report we will say something like that. Second, back to the back-end question, I haven't really thought this through, but there is a project that we could do for which there actually are data. MDLD Stats actually reports for each back-end provider each of the new GTLDs that it serves. That might provide some information. It might suggest that some really small GTLDs are actually going to be able to get services from some of the more successful large back-end providers. You don't have to be very big if your supplier has big economies of scale. They can supply inputs cheaply. So that's a source of data. It's not the price data that we alluded to earlier, but in fact, those are data that exist, and we might think about whether we could actually do something with them. I'll try to think exactly what a project like that would look like. Last point, I think one of the things I think that comes clear to this from this discussion is that having a write-up gives us a kind of a bogey to talk about. It's very difficult to have these conversations and to make nuanced points about them without a written document that essentially puts down a placeholder, and people can say, well, you haven't quite got it right, or you left this out, or I would qualify this in a different way. So I think it's real, from my point of view, not having stuff on paper is a real handicap to having these discussions, and I would urge us to try to get words on paper sooner rather than later. It's actually too late to have it sooner, but the sooner the better.
Thanks, Dan. That's a good point. I think we have to get some things down in on paper for sure. I mean, discussion between templates and pros, I think, isn't really an issue. It's about getting things down on paper so that we have the straw man to have the conversation. I think you're absolutely right about that. Jordan.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I was going to go. So this conversation and maybe Stan saying it over and over again has persuaded me that starting to have a framework of a real document is actually super helpful. So what I was going to propose, at least for the competition and consumer choice side, is not just to have the individual write-ups, but to start to put together an outline that brings them together. Because right now, I think, you know, to the point that Jamie raised earlier, like we have these like sort of random isolated data points, but it's not clear how to contextualize them. And so if we had at least an outline that started to bring together the things that we knew and the things that were where we're expecting data and so on, it might start to help us understand how these pieces fit together, and to perhaps expose more clearly where there's gaps as well. So maybe we can start to pull that together between now and the next plenary call and whatever additional stuff we have there could be incorporated into some sort of broader document as well.
Jordan, I think it's good to have an outline, but I don't think that we should wait to write the pieces until we have the outline.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'm not suggesting. I think those can happen in parallel, Stan.
I talked to Drew yesterday about this. My writing style is if I'm working on a project and I have some idea about something, I write up what I describe as a module. And later, it's often useful. I often find at the end of the day when I'm putting the final document together that it's nice to have a lot of the pieces already written. So I hope that producing the outline doesn't slow down the process of writing the modules.
Yeah, so that's not the intent, Dan. Like, I guess maybe I have the opposite effect. Like, I see these individual pieces, and they're really making me want to think about how the whole works together. And so, I think it may work that you continue to turn out modules and others continue to turn out modules, and, maybe Jonathan and Laureen and I start to work more as editors and thinking about how this stuff fits together into a...
Well, I'd be happy to talk to you offline, because I think I do have a fairly clear idea in my head about at least what the competition section should look like.
Sure. Okay.
That's perfect. I think that's a good suggestion, Jordan. I was sort of heading down that path as well. So why don't you and Laureen and I talk about what that structure might look like together with Alice. That's why we were starting to do that outline process there that was non-substantive but structural, and let's build off of that work. The other thing that a question I had that's just, again, with the straw man here, and Stan, I don't know if we... if there's an easy way to address this, and this is just in this paper, I have a question to Jordan's original point as well, but in looking at a particular provider, when you go to a registrar, when you go to register a new domain name and it's not available, and even if it is, there's about a dozen suggestions of alternatives, which is, I think, one of the things that has led to a greater public understanding that the new GTLDs actually exist, is that there's all these new recommendations that come up when you try to register a name. But the fact that it's a dozen suggestions and not 1,000 suggestions suggests that there's a kind of an above-the-fold, below-the-fold problem, and I don't know what the algorithm is for that, if it's based on existing popularity, or if it's based on deals that have been cut with distributors, and et cetera. And so the question, I guess, begins: is there any way to address this issue of how a new entrant kind of gets into the suggestion list, if that makes sense, for a registrar? Stan, go ahead.
I think that raises a sort of a general, more general point. Somebody asked before about backend, and Jordan gave a very nice discussion of the value chain. What I try to do in this piece was to basically use the data, but this would this ought to have a if you like. A sort of words part that essentially paraphrases what Jordan said. I didn't write it up here because I was focusing on writing up the results of a project. But we need it seems to me the appropriate blend here. And I was hoping for in writing this piece was to get more advice from people with industry expertise who could provide, if you like, I don't know if this is the words or the music. But the industry description that ought to essentially precede this material, and we need to sort of get sort of lift some of these facts down on paper. I think my comparative advantage here is to focus on the data part, but other people's comparative agencies to me to, in fact, provide descriptions of what's going on. I can't do that, but you guys can. But you need to get it on paper.
Thanks, Dan. Okay, in that context, Jordan, did you want to move on to the document that you created and have this conversation, or have you been totally turned around by this conversation?
No, I mean, I think we have, I mentioned the findings from my paper, I think, already. So I don't know if anyone wants to ask questions about that other than what Jamie said, but roughly the short summary is there seems to the new GTLDs themselves seem to be relatively not concentrated by standard definitions. If you look at the GTLD market as a whole, including the legacy GTLD market, it is very concentrated definitions, regardless of which metric we use. And the introduction of new GTLDs really hasn't had much of an effect. It's had a modest positive effect. But that's largely because the new GTLDs are just small. Stan's last paper that we haven't really touched on points out a fact just in Vienna, which is that since the introduction of new GTLDs, roughly 50% of the growth in the GTLD space has been in the new GTLDs. So, you know, to Kylie's point earlier that maybe there's not demand for them, that seems not to be the case. There seems to be equivalent demand for the new GTLDs as the legacy GTLDs, at least in terms of new growth. And, you know, to that extent, you know, what we're seeing is actually quite a bit of the total registrations going into the new GTLDs, into a less concentrated space. But the growth rate is sufficiently slow, and the base of existing new GTLDs, I mean, sorry, the base of legacy GTLDs is so big that it just hasn't had a very big effect on the overall marketplace so far. And in contrast, if we look at the registrar marketplace, it was already not very concentrated, and remain so, and the new GTLDs don't seem to have had a significant effect one way or the other on it. So I guess that would be the rough summary of what I wrote up, and I hinted a little bit at the Stan's last paper, which we really hadn't looked at, and I don't know if he wants to speak to that or if there's any other conclusions that Stan might pull out of that last one. I also know that we want to talk about some of the other sub-team stuff, but maybe that's a good segue to them unless people have additional points they want to discuss on either of those last two.
No, that's a good summary. I just want to go back to something that I don't know what has happened to this project, and it's related to this question of the demand side that Jordan alluded to. You may recall the Nielsen Registrant Survey had some problems because people provided inconsistent answers to the question of where did the registrants in new GTLDs come from? Were they switchers, duplicators, or newcomers? And I think at one point I had a conversation with Aliza about this, and they were going to go back and see whether Nielsen could, in fact, tease something out of their data. Aliza, do you know where that stands at the moment?
Yes, that's one of the actions they took back, and that they're working on. They're looking at how many inconsistent responses they would throw out, and then what that could tell us. I mean, the problem, of course, is that one of the answers were that, you know, some of their registrations applied across all of the GTLDs. Sorry, my daughter is talking to me. So that's where some of the inconsistencies came. She also has an opinion on this, but I won't let her share it.
Okay, like just keep in touch, because that's something I'm particularly interested in.
Yeah, that's definitely on their list, and we'll be following up on that.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Jordan, and thanks, Stan, very much, and thanks, everyone, for your conversations on this. Let me reiterate Stan's request that you go through things that he's written thus far and provide feedback and email on maybe what Stan was looking for is color commentary on the on the facts as he's got them presented.
I actually have a preference if people could take the trouble to actually redline this. I understand some people might not be comfortable doing that. That often turns out to be the most useful way to get specific comments in.
Okay, if you're comfortable redlining, sorry, go ahead.
I take comments in any form, though.
Thank you. Redline or inline comments, maybe if you're not comfortable redlining, so that they can be as specific as possible. So please, everyone, take that as a takeaway, because there will come a point at which it's harder to change these things. Now, Laureen, go ahead and discuss what your team is ready to talk about today. Thanks.
Hi, Jonathan. We are still in the process of getting folks revised discussion papers circulated and discussed among the groups. Alice has helpfully put up a document that has, unfortunately, a lot of question marks. Our sub-team has gotten initial drafts of discussion papers, but after our Vienna meeting and our sub-team meeting, we basically have reconfigured some things and asked people to follow up on some specific items. Thus far, the two discussion papers that I'm lead on, I have circulated to our sub-team. I have circulated to the smaller part of the sub-team. I'll circulate it to the whole sub-team today. And I got some very useful feedback from Carlos that I'm going to be discussing with him, but it hasn't been circulated to the larger group yet. So although I could discuss at least the consumer trust paper, which hasn't gotten feedback from my smaller group, and I'm happy to do that. I guess my preference would be to save that for a future phone call when I've had the benefit of our sub-team group think on it and then also circulated it to this larger group. This is a separate process note, totally apart from my sub-team. Because there's such a huge amount of email traffic regarding this sub-team, we're all constantly emailing each other and exchanging comments and articles. Sometimes, at least for me, it's not clear what is going to be on the table for our plenary call. For example, I know Stan circulated his papers, but I didn't focus on the fact that those were going to be discussed today. In fact, what was on my radar screen was Megan's paper. So this is perhaps just a request in general. It would be very helpful, at least for me and I suspect for others, if there can be some clarity before the call exactly what papers are going to be discussed, just so we can focus on that for our to-do list. So that's just a separate process question, and if by chance I missed that, my apologies, but at least it would help me out in terms of my priority list. So separate and aside for that, we have actually started the narrative outline that Jordan referred to in our sub-team, and that's something actually I think I went over in Vienna, where we have tried to knit together a narrative framework for our various discussion papers to fit into. And our next project is to take our existing discussion papers and figure out the best and most efficient way to knit it into that framework. But while we have some of my sub-team on the phone, I think it would be beneficial to at least get a short statement about what people have been focusing on in terms of their discussion papers, and a summary of what they've done and what needs to be done. I think that would be helpful. I'm happy to start with whoever joined the call first, which I think from my sub-team is Carlos.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Laureen. I'm working with Laureen on the safeguards issue, and we had a good exchange over the last 2 days, and I think it's not a coincidence that Jamie mentioned this morning about the transition to the new registrar agreement. We are trying to set up our discussion not specifically about the GAC safeguards in particular or the voluntary PICs. We are trying to take a broader look at all the changes that have been waiting to increase trust even before the new GTLD program came up. There were a lot of requests from the law enforcement administrations. There were proposals, and the negotiations for the change in the registrar agreement were mixed. Some of the issues that changed were because previous, not breaches of trust, but previous problems with trust. And then the new GTLD came up with a great opportunity to come up with a full new agreement. So we are trying to look at that in the broader picture and try to see what was a problem of trust before the new GTLD and keep it separate from the actions of the new GTL program as per our charter, so we get a broader look from what the trust issues are, and we're not just discussing why the GAC asked for these or for that and so on. That's where I feel I am right now, and as Laureen said, we will have a call later this morning to continue there. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos. And I think Carlos's general point really goes to the need for context and background looking down the road when we are actually putting together our report. Yes, we're focusing on the new GTLDs, but certainly at least some discussion of what led to the safeguards, what led to what's now the standard agreements probably would be helpful. So I'm looking forward to discussing that further with Carlos. Thank you, Carlos. Carlton, can you fill us in? I'm sorry, Carlton, I'm not hearing you. Is your mic on? Carlton? Okay. Looks like I'm having some technical difficulties reaching Carlton.
Hello, Laureen.
Oh, great. Carlton, you're there. Perfect.
I got dropped. I my internet services has been crappy.
I'm sorry. I'm glad you're back. Go ahead.
I'm sorry I didn't hear anything that you said because I didn't have any kind of service. So I
sure, Carlton. what I had, I basically wanted the sub-team members who were on the call to fill us in on what work they were doing on their discussion papers and what remains to be done. Alice,
okay.
So that's what I've asked, because right now it looks like folks haven't formally updated their discussion papers yet, despite our hopeful deadline.
You're right about that, Lorraine. I tell you what we've done. I'm in touch with Gal, looking at the for the consumer awareness paper that I wrote. There were two issues that came up, whether or not we had enough data to make some of the statements that is in the paper. And I've asked her to look over it for me to see whether or not she can come up with areas where we could refine it. And she's going to do that for me. The data points that cover the global south, let us use that term, they're not so readily gleaned from the paper, and we were keen to make sure that there was something that we could say that was definitive about awareness in the global south. So that's the principal bugbear with the paper. With regard to RPMs, you would have noticed that I asked a whole set of questions from the procedures, whether or not the procedures are relevant. I still need to get a few more pieces of data, or at least some qualifications to put that one to bed. We've not been able to set up the conversations that we want to have with compliance yet. When we've done that, then I think we will be in a position to put that specific paper to bed. And that's about two that I held a pen on.
Thanks, Carlton. So I would just encourage everyone on my sub-team to try and wrap these things up as quickly as they can, since we are heading into Hyderabad and we want to be able to present a cogent narrative, at least a finding. What I want to encourage my team as a whole to focus on is, although I know we don't have all the data and that there are going to be holes, I would really strongly recommend that people mine the data we do have. And in that regard, Carlton, I'm very glad you are talking with compliance, because not only for you, but several members of my sub-team need to supplement their papers with some compliance data. And fortunately, compliance is actually a very rich source of data, so I'm happy to hear that's going on. David, I saw your note that you're going into the tunnel. I'm hoping you can still hear us. And if you can, it would be great to get an update from you. I know that a lot of your focus on the rights protection mechanisms depends on the INTA study. But what I'm wondering, David, is if you've had an opportunity to look at the compliance data that may relate to some of the RPM issues. So I can't tell if David is still hearing us or not. So I'll give a pause. I see Jamie's typing. Okay, I'm going to assume that David is not able to hear us right now. So I will move on to to Drew for an update. Like David, I know Drew is also working on some data, but perhaps you can give us a quick update, Drew, and also let us know if there's any existing data that might be able to populate any findings on the abuse issues that you're taking the lead on.
Sure. So the paper I'm focused on for everyone, it's what was the impact of the new safeguards on DNS abuse? And so I'm working on this with Calvin, and thus far, in the absence of data from the DNS abuse study, what we've been trying to do is something that we definitely have to get right, and that's to come up with consistent definitions for DNS abuse that will at least be our working definitions, because in the community, of course, there are no universal definitions of DNS abuse. Some people consider it to only include things such as, technical things such as malware hosting, phishing, botnet command and control. Others would also add spam to that, and then others would add a whole category of other things such as intellectual property issues and even issues that where you're getting into harm to children and whatnot. And so we're trying to come up with buckets and categories. That way, even if, and what the reality is likely going to be, even if we are only able to do a quantitative analysis of some of this, which will likely be those technical categories I first described, we could at least acknowledge the other categories and point out what type of data would be needed to analyze those. But what we want to avoid doing with the impact of the new keeping this a study focused on the impact of new GTLDs is we want to avoid getting into, issues that touch upon national law, because that's going to be, just definitely outside our scope and our abilities. So that's what we're working on now. That's the main focus. And then to your second question, Lorraine, as far as what sorts of data issues already exist for this, what other people are already working on in defining these safeguards and what their intentions were. But as far as compliance data, the compliance data I've seen so far does not appear to help answer these impact questions. Instead, I could maybe start writing about, the number of complaints to compliance about some issue that could be tied to a safeguard. But from what I was seeing with the data that compliance has shared with us thus far, I don't see anything that would really help to answer that question. But I would love to hear anyone else's feedback if they think that there might already be some pre-existing compliance or other data.
Thanks, Drew. I'm wondering, when I had looked at the compliance data a while ago, I know there was a category that I thought related to abuse complaints. And I'm wondering if I misunderstood that, or if after digging into that, it wasn't the right information. Maybe you can just refresh my recollection.
So the data, and let's see if I can get it in front of me. The data I recall looking at, for which there was actually a substantial quantity of data, was where compliance basically received complaints about DNS abuse and then informed the individuals, hey, we're not the registrar, or hey, we're, not this, rather than there being these complaints about this registrar is violating the registrar accreditation agreement because of this DNS abuse issue. Yeah, from the spreadsheets I've seen, I haven't seen anything that would answer that. And maybe, Aliza, you want to chime in if you know of some data that might be useful here in trying to measure this impact? analysis?
Hi, Drew. This is Aliza. I'm looking at the data that we've been compiling, and I don't see anything specific to that. Brian, I don't know if that's something you've looked into. Maybe you can answer better than I can. But I'm looking around right now, and I'll let you know if I come across anything.
Okay, and yeah, I pulled it up again to you for myself. Yeah, Brian. Brian, I'm sure you looked at a bunch of this stuff when you did your report in the spring. Do you recall as far as what sort of compliance data might be helpful for this?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. My sense of compliance data is that there's not going to be any kind of sort of aha data. That it tends to be quite reported incidents tend to be quite low in number or minimal, so it's hard to really draw conclusions, meaningful conclusions from compliance data. That being said, of course, it's very useful to have. So I wouldn't expect too much from it in terms of changing or altering the substance of what we're already generally understanding. But that's my sense of what we're likely to receive. So thanks.
Thanks. So basically what I'm hearing is that our primary data source is going to be hopefully the DNS abuse study we hope to commission if we can get funding for it. And that right now what we have are the questions that we want to ask. There's not any secondary sources, so to speak, that we can look to at this point. Is that fair? Is that a fair summary, Drew?
Yes, that's a fair summary. And so, I think to fulfill our mandate, we really need that study.
Okay. Jamie, I know that it's been a very busy time for you on many levels. So maybe you and I can connect sometime offline to chat about what it might be productive to focus on. But if there's any work you've been doing behind the scenes on the discussion papers, collaborating with any others on the sub team that you want to fill me in on or fill the team in on, please feel free to do that now.
Sure, I've been doing a lot of behind the scenes work, just not with anybody else. but thank you for that, and happy to talk to you offline.
Okay. So that's basically where things stand for now, Jonathan. As I said, I'm happy to for the next call. I would think we could tee up at least the paper on consumer trust. And maybe the call after that, the paper on implementation of the safeguards. And then the rest will really depend on folks being able to update their discussion papers.
Thanks, Lorene. Thanks, folks, for giving your updates. On an application evaluation, as I said, I've gotten a little bit of an update from Andrew Mack that they're proceeding apace and should have something for us here by the end of the month. What I'd like to do is have Megan discuss briefly the paper that she just circulated on the application evaluation issues that she's dealing with respect to the GAC. So I'm going to hand the microphone over to Megan.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. The paper, I understood I was supposed to discuss the benefits versus confusion to end users paper. Isn't that the one to present that?
Perfect.
So, Okay, good. That's not related specifically to GAC related issues, but the two that I had done before related to GAC early warning advice and GAC advice, and how that influenced the application and evaluation process. And the other was on string contention. But those two I'm updating. Well, I've it's in handwriting, but we haven't seen anything. But I'm updating those following our Vienna discussion to come further, and I need some further data. But I will finish this. But the one I'm going to talk about now is on benefits versus confusion to end users. So I looked through the Nielsen Consumer Survey, and I looked also at the ICANN GTLD Marketplace Health Index, amongst others. And the questions that I was supposed to ask or that I developed were things like, what benefits to end users? And when I talk about end users, I specifically said consumers gain in having a broader and more diverse source of domain name for access. What benefits do registrants gain in having a broader and more diverse source of domain names? And I think it's important to distinguish between the two. And you'll see in the very first sub-question A, in the parentheses, and this is why I was confused about the back-end providers, because the GTLD Marketplace Health Index specifically referred to aspects like geographic elements, new scripts, which are IDNs, of course, and new service models. And so because there's no data yet on new service models, well, there is some on geographic aspects and some of the regional issues we've discussed to a certain extent already, and on IDN, I concentrated more on those. So does an increased number and type of GTLDs, and here, just geographic create confusion for end users? Because the question was, is there data showing that there's an advantage, and is there any data that shows that consumers are lost or confused? And on the second one, I haven't found any data to show them. And where and how we could do it, I'm not entirely sure. Except possibly, but again, this is perhaps limited because it may not be confusing. It may relate more to what Drew is working on in referring to mitigation of risks of DNS abuse. I don't know if confused consumers as opposed to high-risk DNS is more of a problem for consumers. But that was the second part of the question. And does an increase in confusion for end users or consumers, if it exists, reduce the value to registrants with a new type and number of GTLDs? So I'm going to go very quickly now, not just read the whole bump. But on the first sub-question, A, I think from the data that we have, which, as I said, are from the ICANN Marketplace Survey, and the Nielsen survey, there's a fair amount of data which leads me to the conclusion that consumers have certainly gained in having a broader and more diverse source of domain names to access. That's clear because they're more by definition. Therefore, there's more choice for consumers. And that registrants also have gained by being able to use different types of areas, geographic areas, or using IDN to better direct their products to consumers. So I think that's absolutely clear, and the little paper goes on to explain how and what this is. On the sub-question B, in terms of confusion, or reducing the value to registrants, I don't have any data really that confirms this, and it's very hard to say whether this is the case or not. So, jumping immediately to the priorities to address and the recommendations, it's really that on the sub-question B, probably this is something that could be done in a future survey and when the next CCT review is done, because there will be a repeat of this at some point in the future, and we will be able to identify more clearly what the expanded choice has been, and we will have a better idea also, because it's still early days, for particularly for some of the very recently delegated DPLDs to assess how robust the market's going to be and how robust the whole system's going to be. And again, another factor which I think is very important too is that in a growing market, a growing pie, if you like, we should be able to see in the future much better information about what this really means. So it's still rather a work in progress, and it's rather rough, but that gives you an overview of what it is. And again, I'm more than happy to see people tear it apart, turn it upside down, add, subtract, put in the data. Eliza very usefully put in something in one of the footnotes to clarify some of the data. So please feel free to add, subtract, adjust, and improve.
Laureen, go ahead.
Hey, Megan. Thanks so much for your paper. I know the issue of singulars and plurals has been the subject of GAC advice in the past, and I also note the lack of specific questions about that in at least the Nielsen studies. What I'm wondering is, has anyone done any literature review or search to see if there are any other existing data sources, not commissioned by ICANN, but just out there in the world that that talk about this issue? That it just struck me if there are any secondary sources that we can look to.
Well, it's a great question. I don't know the answer. I've seen a number of newspaper articles, or not newspaper, technical articles, I suppose, or technical journal articles on similar things, but I'm not at all aware of other secondary literature. Maybe the ICANN staff who follows day by day, or some of the other participants know a bit more about other sources.
Laureen, this is Eliza.
Yes, thanks.
Sorry, I was just going to say that we did do quite a bit of searching, I think, early on when your team was looking for data on different studies that might introduce this. That's how we came across that Trust in the Internet survey that you and I have been talking about recently, and we haven't come across anything else in our research, but I don't know how exhaustive that would be, but we've definitely looked for other sources.
So other sources specifically on this issue of confusion with the topic of Megan's paper about
maybe not confusion, but definitely about consumer perception broadly. So anything that's related to consumer perception of the DNS, whether it's trust, participation, and use of, which I think confusion would presumably be covered in those areas.
Thanks, Eliza. That's good to know.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments for Megan?
Hello.
Sorry. Oh, Kali, go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, this is Kali. Can I speak? Well, I believe, besides the confusion caused to end users, or I'm not sure if the end user means the individual Internet end user or the registrant, right? But whatever, I believe on top of confusion, the phrase, probably we should also include a drawback, whether there are drawbacks for registrants and Internet individual end users. For example, after the new GTLD, there has been quite some complaints about defensive registrations. So therefore, whether that is a drawback for the new GTLD being introduced, that is probably is an issue, especially as I heard from the business constituency from there. Another issue is about speculation, which is closely related to park registration. And as Jordan explained, we still do not have the final data, but last time in Vienna, we already saw some preliminary data that showed that over half of new registrations are parked. By various kinds of calculations, in some calculations, it shows that up to, I believe, around 75% or so. So whether speculation could be considered a drawback, because clearly I do not believe that speculation is among the purpose of introducing the new GTLD program. Instead, I believe and I believe that everybody would agree that speculation is harmful for the internet, especially at this kind of magnitude, that over half of new registrations are being parked and susceptible to speculation. So I believe on top of the confusion to end users, I believe that drawbacks could also be included. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. Can I just respond to that quickly, Jonathan? Dear leader.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you very much. Kelly, I understand your concern. My point, though, was that even if there's speculation, even if there are domain names that have been parked, I don't think anyone can say that this creates confusion for users, because if they're parked, they're not really being used, and they may also be parked or even being used for speculative purposes, because people know that this is a growing market, or are expecting, let me put it that way, are expecting this to be a growing market. If we have 4 billion new internet users coming on to the market in the next 20 years, let's say, that's the theory.
Excuse me, I don't quite understand you. You mentioned that it is expected that over 4 billion end users, how would that relate to the number of registering domain names? I do not see a clear connection between these two.
My argument is that the market is growing. There will be new consumers online, and new interests, and new demands. In theory.
Why
this is being done. Anyway, my point is that I think I'm not saying we shouldn't necessarily look at the park issue, whether these are being parked for what reason or not. That should be done. But I don't think I have the data first to look at it. And for me, it's important to distinguish between the consumers and the registrants. So I don't see how consumers would be confused by the fact that a new name is registered but not necessarily used. They'll just say something that's empty and they'll go somewhere else. They'll go to prom instead.
Please allow me to quickly respond. I believe we can go into further discussion through email after this meeting. However, I suggest these issues be included in our preliminary findings especially in relation to Hyderabad, because then we will be introducing our findings, and we will want, I believe it is to our team's interest to provide an entire view of our findings rather than narrowing down, otherwise to avoid future conflicts. Thank you.
But Kylie, I couldn't agree more. If we have data and if we have information and we have facts that show us things, by all means, we should include them. My point was that I don't have anything that I've seen that shows that an increased number and type of GTLD, either geographic, has created confusion for consumers. And I don't find anything
at least
that shows. That's my point.
Yes.
Not
yes.
That we shouldn't look at the other.
I agree with you. We do not see anything without data support. However, if we do not have enough convincing data support, we do not also would not want to make conclusion in the other direction. We keep ourselves neutral on that. So that is, we provide our findings with which already has data support. And also we list issues that we already have some preliminary data, but not having the full data. At least list them. Just
so, Kylie, we're definitely going to make that caveat.
Excuse me.
I think, Kylie, we're definitely going to make that caveat about insufficient data in the final report.
Yeah.
There's no question that will be the case, and so. And as we discussed in Vienna, we're also going to make, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, not only insufficient data, but also let the readers or audience know in what direction we're looking for data that point to.
Sure. I will do that And as we discussed in Vienna, if there's an issue on which the group has reached consensus, but there's a minority view, we will find an opportunity and a place for those minority statements as well within the report, as we discussed in Vienna. Folks, we're out of time. We'll exchange information on the program of calls. I mean, to Loreen's point, it's actually in our hands. Jordan's, mine, and yours to document what will be covered on each call. That's in fact the purpose of the grid, Loreen. So we just need to. That's kind of on us to bring that up to date so that we are aware of what's going to be discussed on a call and people can come prepared to discuss it. So Alice has put up the schedule for Hyderabad and. So it's good we have that. We can begin to evangelize the engagement session with folks. And I guess I'll take this, any other business opportunity to apologize if I got out too far ahead of the group in my little op-ed, a blog post on the ICANN site. I was just cherry-picking some things that seemed interesting that would get people interested in following what we were doing. So if I overstated anything or went beyond the consensus, I apologize to the group, and I'll make sure and run a blog post by the group in the future. Okay, thanks everyone, and let's stay on it. Please read the documents that have been circulated, and provide comments in email or in document whenever possible. Thanks everyone for your time.
Thanks, John.